肉里面稍微咸一点吧。
Yep。
So what's your name?
That was in my head, that sound. That wasn't a car one. Stephen Curry, that's it. Stephen Curry, not the basketballer.
And do you get that often? Assuming people...
Look, only our mothers can tell us apart. But yeah, I just, yeah. I mean, I'm the first one, so I guess he can go fuck himself. He stole the idea. Same spelling and everything. I did a credit card ad years ago.
Are you sure it's A-N, isn't it, or E-N?
Yeah, same spelling. Yeah. I did this ad for this credit card, and it was for an international audience, and they put my name on it. And they put my name on the card, you hold it out and you go, get this card, or whatever. And it says Stephen Curry, or in America it would look like Stephen Curry. And I said, that's bad, you shouldn't do that. You should put John Smith or something, because it's like, they may as well have put Shaquille O'Neal. You know what I mean? And so some white guy holding out Stephen Curry, and they're going, it's not him. I almost had my credit card confiscated on a plane in America once because they thought I'd stolen Steph Curry's credit card. No shit. He goes, that's not you. And I said, do you think Steph Curry has a pink and blue Bank of Melbourne card?
And do you think there's only one of them?
Yeah, believe it or not. But again, it should have been, it may as well have been Shaquille O'Neal. You know what I mean? Because if it was, they'd say, well, that's not you, sir. You know? But anyway, fuck you, Steph. I mean, bless you, Steph. Yeah.
So tell us, Steph, Stephen, Stefan, Mr. Curry.
No, it's my dad. You know, Steve's good.
Steve?
Yeah.
How did you end up here? How did you get here to?
Do you mean metaphorically?
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. Where do I begin? It's probably conceived in mid-1975, I guess. Are we going back that far?
As far back as yeah. possible.
No, look, I don't know. Why am I here? I'm here, I guess, because for some... through some fucking... I don't know. Stroke of good fortune, I had this ambition as a little kid to become an actor, and it just kind of happened. So it was nice. And when I say just kind of happened, yeah, there's a lot that goes into it, but there's a shitload of luck and there's a shitload of kind of advice to the contrary as you grow up to kind of not do it, not do that. Because it's a dumb, dumb idea. It's a fucking stupid idea to go into my game. If you're a betting man, which I'm not, which is odd, right? Because you think if you're not a betting man, just be an accountant. Do you know what I mean? Like, just don't take that the one in a thousand bet, you know? I was going to say one in a million, but get over yourself, fuckhead. You know, mate, like, the odds were, you look like this as a kid and you tell people, I want to be an actor in that. It's like they go, oh, get something to fall back on. It's not going to work out for you. You know what I mean? Like, seriously, and with good reason, with very good reason. But yeah, so I just got really fucking lucky and was able to repay people through, you know, for that luck, and you build on your luck, you know, piss your luck up against the wall or whatever, but without that luck or without that kind of, I guess, a little bit of momentum and stuff that luck gives you, you're kind of a bit stitched in my game.
So you're a risk taker as much as in the second person, but...
I'm not. That's the weird thing. I'm not a risk taker. My brother-in-law and my brothers, for that matter, they see me as very conservative, which I kind of am. I've never wanted to drive fast. I've never wanted to jump off high shit. Half pipes were just really scary. All that stuff, like even that as a kid, that's what you, if that was your.
Were you scared of things?
Yeah, if that was your indicator of how risk-taking you were, or how big your cojones were or whatever, then no, I'm not. And I'm conservative. like financially, I'm not a risk taker. I don't play the markets or anything like that. I've had it drummed into my head from a very young age from my father, like, you know, live within your means. I've never had a credit card because I just sort of like, I don't think I should be on other people's coin because I will forget because mine is scatty as fuck as well. So I would forget all my repayments. We were just talking before about Afterpay. I would be bad at that. I would be really bad at that. So I just never, I am not a risk taker, no. But I've gone into the probably one of the riskiest careers. I mean, I am. Is there a great risk in it? Or is it just like, if it doesn't work out, you just dust yourself off and find something else. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah,
maybe that's what it is. But the risk there is just having to go, it didn't work out for me, I guess.
Mm.
And that's okay. It's still mine.
What was the first? What was the biggest risk then that you took to get to see where you are now? There's going to be one defining moment that was risque.
The biggest risk. I just think not listening to the advice of very intelligent people around me. I think that was the biggest risk I took. Like, I just kind of went, nah. Like, everyone from my parents, who were always supportive of this shit as well. Sorry. They wouldn't call it that, but you know what I mean. The teachers, you know, role models and stuff that I've had in my life all said the same thing.
So shunning them in a sense.
Yeah, they all just said, just do your thing and follow your dream. And they always saw that I was a little show-off. But it's like, there are heaps of little show-offs out there who are just a bit better looking than you. You know what I mean? But that was probably it. That was probably the biggest risk, because I've got nothing to fall back on. And kind of joyously so, up until I had kids, I was like going, hey, this is great.
This is me.
This is me, right? And I'm approaching 50, and I kind of don't have any. I certainly don't have any qualifications, let alone discernible skills in any other area that I could earn money in, or would have interest in earning money in, or in which anyone would have interest in employing me, as well. And that's okay as well. Like, it's pretty fun. It's the funnest. I love going to work. I love it. Like, it's. I still get as much joy today as I ever did. But that's the biggest risk, I think, is just kind of just going, nah, I'm all in. As a non-risk taker. As a non-betting man. I'm all in.
Strawberries or raspberries?
Strawberries are good with ice cream. Frozen raspberries are good with ice cream, aren't they? Mm. Raspberry coolie's pretty good. Don't mind a bit of a raspberry swirl through an ice cream, but I'm not a big fan of the strawberry through the ice cream. It's odd, isn't it? See, I knew we'd deal with the big stuff here. Although strawberries dipped in chocolate kick ass over those fake raspberries. You little... And sniff that bit. Actually, stay there. Yeah. I think, look, they're both good. I grow them both, by the way. I grow them both at home, and I do actually, I haven't got a problem with either. You weren't talking euphemistically, were you? Good.
Mongoose or Melbourne Star?
What could I afford, or what did I get as a kid?
What did you prefer?
Everyone wanted a Mongoose or a Redline.
But everyone got the Melbourne Star.
Yeah, but I got the Melbourne Star.
You're saying?
Yeah.
But no, the Melbourne Star was cool.
You saw the kid, yeah. Well, it's all retro, it's all kind of ironic. Anything with a chrome bits. Remember those red lines, all that, or mongoose in the plural, is it? I don't know. Mongooses, actually, that's the truth. Plural of mongoose is mongooses, not mongooses. Mongoose. See, no understandable skills. But far out. Is it desire or reality? Desire is mongoose, reality is Melbourne Star. Which actually feeds into now too, because like, if you do a job that pays you, like sometimes you don't work for a bit, sometimes you do a job that pays you really well. And I think the mongoose and the Melbourne Star idea works, because there's a lot of people who think that they're gonna keep earning that money, and so they buy the mongoose.
Especially in this
Yeah, so that's what my dad always drummed into me. It's like, when you can afford the Mongoose, buy the Melbourne Star and save the money for when you can't even buy the Melbourne Star. I think that's maybe why I've never had a credit card.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Or even just steal a Melbourne Star.
Or steal
the
Mongoose.
Steal a Mongoose? Yeah, but those kids are probably going to have slightly more powerful parents.
And friends. With the pegs. If you've got pegs, you can mean you've got mates.
The pegs
on the back.
Oh, the pegs on the back. I thought you meant the peg on the footy card to make it sound like a motorbike. Sorry.
On the back.
Pegs.
Yeah.
No. I got it. On the back, yeah. Remember on the back axle when you put the footy
card?
Or the margarine lid, and it sounds like a motorbike. I've basically got a motorbike. So, no, you don't. You've got a peg. And it's a bit of margarine lid, and it's a Melbourne Star, idiot, dickhead. I actually had a bumblebee. That's what I had. I didn't. No one ever knows that name. It got stolen. Stolen from Anthony Kuhner's front yard. I was 10. It was devastating. Thanks for laughing through that, because that's making it even worse. It's never quite got no. I'll grab my things.
So I guess what would you say triggers your creativity, and what kind of, at this stage of your life, kind of connects you to the art, your art, and, you know, what?
I like reading a character. I'm not a trained actor or anything. I don't have any like names that I can put to a technique of someone who's done something before, like Brecht or whatever those guys are called. Mm. Stanislavski.
Yeah, Chekhov.
Chekhov. Jurkowski, is that it? No. Jurkowski. I don't know. Anyway, I think what gets me going artistically is kind of reading a character that, because you know, it's always the first time you read it, it's bullshit, bullshit, my bit, bullshit, 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 my bit. And if you think your bit's interesting enough, then you go back to the start and you read the whole thing.
Right? Yeah.
But if the my bit in between the bullshit bit, it's like, if I can recognize a person, if I can recognize a personality trait, I like to kind of watch people. It's a bit creepy probably. Mm-hmm. But that thing about observation, I think, is key. And I've got like 1,000 characters in my head of people that I've seen. But you know how people think they've got a inner monologue, but they don't have a good, that you can see it all?
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I love that. I'm fascinated by that. I love the charms and chains and shit are great. But yeah, that's what excites me, is kind of like reading a character and I go, I know that, because that's the dude on the tram that I saw 2 years ago with what I think was his nephew or whatever. Like, you know, I like that I can now use that physicality or that what I, you know, how you start, you think, you ever do that thing where you're sitting on a train or whatever and you just kind of like, you got your sunnies on and you tell the story of these two, or you tell the story of this dude. I don't know, this might be really weird. So you're stuck, very stuck. Yeah, and it's interesting to me because it's kind of like, you go, oh yeah, cool, and you're almost certainly wrong. But if you do one that kind of like fascinates you, and I'm happy, you know, I have people do that to me and my wife as well. I don't care. I'm not being judgy, whatever. But that, it's like, if I can kind of go, oh, that's a cool one. Like, that's a good thing. And then you sort of start to think about the motivations within that, the machinations within people. Yeah. That's what excites me. Sorry, your long answer to your short question. Finding a character that I recognise that I haven't done. That I've seen but I haven't done. Yeah.
So it doesn't excite you, obviously, to play the same character?
No.
You're like, get out of there.
No. And that's interesting. You just kind of, I played the same character for the first 10 years anyway. Like, just like a slightly bumbling.
Change of it a little bit.
Good hearted dipshit who couldn't get laid.
What was it? Jousting sticks? Or dug another hole?
Yeah. So once you dig another hole. Then for the years after that, you just play bumbling people with heart of gold who can't get laid. And that's fine. It's fine. And don't get me wrong. Again, it's like, I'm appreciative of every job I've had. I love it. But it's when I started getting more wrinkles.
The roles change.
Yeah, the roles started changing. And so it was great because it was kind of like you start getting some really, I wanted to play creeps or whatever. I wanted to play a creep. And then it's like, careful what you wish for, because you end up playing, like in this film, Hounds of Love, I played a psychopathic, fucking murdering, child molesting, the worst person in the world. Like, pick every personality trait that you hate, and this guy had it, kind of thing. And that was great. It was a great challenge. But then I was like, oh, fuck. Because then I've got to get in the head of like that guy.
I've got
two little kids at home. I was over in Western Australia, and my kids were here in Melbourne. And that was a bit much, because then you sort of start to want to just be protecting your little babies, you know? I mean, this is pretty good, isn't it? What do you think?
It's funny because I can't actually see her in frame.
Oh, really? Oh.
It's brilliant.
There's a dog. There.
Yeah. And what was that role? What role was it that changed that 10 years? Bouncing around.
That would have been probably Changi, I guess. Changi was in 2001, and that was like a war drama.
Okay.
Still a bit of comedy in it, I guess. There was a bit of comedy in it, but it was, you know, set in Changi prison, and got to do some pretty heavy stuff in there, and it was great. It was great. It was like this oddball kind of musical kind of drama, kind of comedy, kind of malign. It was really good. Written by John Doyle, Roy from HDN Roy. And great, he's just a bit of a genius, that man. Bit of a genius, sorry, John. A genius. Can't be a bit of a genius, can you? It's like Elaine Bennett. I got a little class. Can't have a little class. Yeah, that was pretty good. And then that kind of led on to a few other things, and played Graham Kennedy in 2005, I think it was, 2006. And that was great, because he's a pretty complex unit. And I wouldn't have played him if he was alive. He died a couple of years earlier.
Mm-hmm.
One of my heroes.
Did you spend much time with him?
Never. Never met him.
No.
Never met him. Really? I watched it. I loved it. Mum raised us on Kennedy, you know. But no, I never met him. But I think if he was alive, I wouldn't have done it, because I think that he wasn't backward in coming forward. He was pretty ready to call you a fuckhead.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Can I say fuckhead?
Say whatever you want.
Can I say cunt?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just not to me.
I won't. But yeah, so he was good. He was amazing. He's an amazing character, you know, and very, very... And the film wasn't about a trip down memory lane. It was actually pretty balls and all about kind of what made him tick and all that sort of stuff. And he was a fairly tortured kind of dude, and abandonment issues, and but that double, the other side of that coin was that he's, you know, there would never be anyone like him. Like, there's, you know, people will come and go, but no, I don't reckon that spark and that genius and that man will never be repeated. And so that, as such, that's why I would never do it if he was alive, because I would almost guarantee you that he would watch it and hate it.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a no-brainer.
So how did you prep for something like that, not meeting him?
You go into a room.
Archives?
Or? Yeah. You go into this room in Channel 9. It's not there anymore. It's called the Archive Room, I think. I don't know how they came up with that. And it was just this room full of old low-band U-matic tapes. The worst cataloguing you've ever seen in your life. Cataloguing. Just boxes and boxes of tapes. And the way they cataloged it is it might have said IMT, which was his show in Melbourne Tonight, that went from 1957 to 1979 or something. And it just would say on the label, IMT, 1961 or something. You know what I mean? Like, so lazy. And so they did 5 nights a week.
Oh, wow.
For 45 weeks a year. And that could have been any of those nights or any part of any of those nights, but there was nothing else on there. So you're just going through all this shit. And Bert was the one who told me too. I had the pleasure of meeting Bert a few times, and he told me about how you know, all of those specials, all those, you know, Graham and Bert specials that you see, they roll them out once every few years. He said that was great, and they were all, that was all as funny as then as it is now or whatever. But that's them sifting through a lot of nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were nights where nothing happened. You got 5 nights a week. Everyone's got to come ready to, a lot of it's improving, and then a lot of times impro, by its very nature, just falls to shit. You know? And so they, he said it was amazing because all this stuff. So we found that. We went through all these tapes and far out there, there was just some stuff. But today, if you saw it on the on air, make it to air, because they were going live, and there was no 7 second delay or whatever. It was just, they just were just stuck with, if they were bogged down in nothing, they were kind of having to go through it. If you saw it, the show would be axed. If they made it to air, it'd be axed, because it's what is this? You know, it's a piece of shit. But the show is incredible, and all people any ever remember are those indelible comedy moments and those genius sketches and connections that Graham made with all of his co-stars. You know, and that's him driving the van. but it was great. It was great, but a complete unwieldy mess. But yeah, sorry, to prepare for it, just to kind of go through all that stuff, to speak to a whole bunch of the old crew, watch a bunch of stuff. And it's not about mimicking him even. So you get, it's about sort of the spirit of him. You know, I think a lot of people, and I'm pretty jealous of people who can actually, I'm not a mimic by any stretch, you know. But I'm quite jealous of people who can mimic, but at the same time, it's like, I think for me, what I want to see is the essence, you know? Joaquin Phoenix as Johnny Cash. You know, a couple of mannerisms. The voice was excellent. Kind of the vibe was really good, but his essence was what made it, you know?
So like Val Kilmer doing
Jim Morrison. Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. I just think affectations are great, but they've got to be attached. They've got to be attached to. Oh, look like there's something wrong with me there. No, they've got that. I'm now doing that to prove that I haven't. No, but they've got to. Affectations have got to be attached to purpose and to essence, to the essence of their character, or they're nothing. It just becomes a sketch. You know, so you can see someone impersonate someone, and that's great. But just that's what you want to see. You want to see the essence of the person. That sounded like a long-winded fucking thing.
Oh, brilliant.
Good.
So where now? What's driving you now in your
later
years?
I don't know. I write a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff doesn't get up. But it's kind of like the more I write and the more I've got, you know, very close with a lot of stuff. I've got some stuff on the go at the moment. It's about sort of shaking the, you sometimes get an impression that there's a bit of a stay in your lane mentality when you want to write something and create something.
Mm.
And I get that. That's fine. But I think what's driving me is just like, you know, to be able to sort of get through that and sort of be considered as a writer in my own right, not an actor who wants to write shit with himself at the centre of it. You know what I mean? And that's the thing, that's the problem. When I'm writing, it's like, oh, yeah, cool, I think I'd be good in this role or whatever. But no, it is. That's my thing. It's just like, I've probably got 20, 30 years left maybe, and I'd just love to be able to be a bit more autonomous, a bit more in control of the destiny. It's a bit tragic sitting there waiting for someone to call you. Do you know what I mean? You know what I mean? It's like, it's kind of, you know, as long as this phone's ringing enough, I'm not in any great hurry, it's okay, it's good. But no, be a bit more in control.
Do you think the writing is where it's going to go, essentially? Sitting at home, in your, on the desk or on the rocking chair?
Yeah, I love writing. I love writing. I think a day of writing is probably, and I love acting, but I think a good day of writing is probably more satisfying spiritually or whatever than a good day on set.
Mm.
You know,
I just stay on set, ever, you know,
Hardest day.
And you don't have to mention any names or movie.
Hardest day. Oh, no, no, I probably already have. I already have mentioned that film. It's that Hounds of Love. The hardest day would have been, you know, having to do some really heinous shit to...
And understand heinous shit.
Yeah. Yeah, and have to come to terms with the fact that that happens to people.
Yeah.
And that thing about being, feeling like I was, you know, I was the other side of the country, but I felt like I was on the other side of the world to my little babies and, yeah, that'd be it. Just that kind of, I don't know, comedy's great because it's like, again, I can play the dude on the tram in that comedy or whatever, but don't have to take that home,
mm-hmm.
you know? But that character, you kind of, he's all over you. Can't shake him. Yeah.
What's your favourite monologue?
The one I just gave. You kidding me? It's fucking word for word. That's Proust. You know I've just done an entire Proust. Proustian. Is it Proustian? I mean, fuck off. Fuck you. It's Proustian. I think it's Proustian. Yeah. I don't know, man. My favourite monologue. Probably Christopher Walken in Pulp Fiction. This uncomfortable hunk of metal up my ass. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to do it. But that's pretty good. I do like a monologue that just kind of that goes where you don't think it's going to go. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
You can do the "She was my mother" all you like, but that speech from Christopher Walken in Pulp Fiction to little
Jimmy?
Butch.
Jimmy?
Butch?
Butch? Jimmy? Johnny?
Andrew Butch.
No, the kid
though. Yeah, but that's little
that's
Butch, isn't it?
That's Butch. That's
Zed's dead, baby. Zed's dead. Christopher Walken coming in to talk to the little kid, and he's got the watch, and he's here to give the watch, and he spends this entire diatribe that watch has spent 5 years up his ass in a Vietnamese prison camp. I like someone like Christopher Walken can turn the most sinister thing, or the most comedic thing sinister, most sinister thing comedic. I don't know, that knife's edge. Yeah, that knife, well yeah, right, so yeah. Okay, so him in Deer Hunter, yeah, right, same idea. But...
Such a serious moment.
So serious, so, okay, so my favourite performance ever though, and this odd one, it's an odd one, is Gene Wilder in Willy Wonka, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because he doesn't even appear until halfway through that film. But who do you fucking think of when you think of that film? And sure, it's called Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. It's sort of cheating. But that is a comedy film with the most incredibly frightening knife's edge horror element. Suspense, kind of thriller, kind of some heavy drama elements to it, but that performance is so on the edge and so dangerous, could go off the rails in the wrong hands, probably in anyone else's hands, would go off the rails.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, Johnny Depp was like that other one, the Charlie and Chocolate Factory. Yeah. It's great. It's a flight of fancy and it's fantastic, but it's not a fucking patch on Gene Wilder, because that dance between comedy and horror, so sinister, but all with this drive towards the heart and looking for the heart and looking for the heart and the kid, looking for the right person to take the keys, you know, but does that, leads him on that merry dance. It's like, oh mate, it gives me chills. It's the best. People think you're a bit stupid if you say my favourite performance in the world is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, but it's like, if you have a look at it again, it's timeless.
Mm, mm.
Yeah.
De Niro or Pacino?
De Niro up until he did Bad Grandpa, I guess. I don't know. You hear stories about it. Like De Niro, he's fucking the best. He's the best ever. But he, in terms of his entire... oeuvre, you know, oeuvre, fuck off. Well, no, sorry. And again, it's like, fuck, he's De Niro. De Niro. He also did The Irishman only a couple of years ago. He's still De Niro. But you hear stories about how he's got too many Japanese restaurants or something. Or too many apartment buildings in Tribeca or something. Whatever, I don't know. Apparently he needs the work because he's just got so much going that it'll all fucking fall in a heap on him or something. So he does bad grandpa. Or bad grandpa too.
It's getting the Nicolas Cage vibes.
Or the little fuckers or something.
Yeah.
And having said that, his performance in Meet the Parents is pretty fucking funny.
Pretty funny, yeah.
I have nipples, Greg. Could you milk me? De Niro. Pacino, oh fuck, well, who am I to talk? They're both amazing, but you know. Pacino almost felt the need to shout a bit more. I quite like the skill of being able to create menace through stillness and through quiet. Through intense.
When they're sitting both of them the first time on screen.
Oh yeah.
Michael Mann wrote that scene for
him. Yeah. And Michael Mann's sitting there giving it all that. Yeah, mate, like, it's fucking De Niro. I've got this idea where De Niro and Pacino are gonna sit opposite each other. It's gonna be amazing. It's like, yeah.
No shit.
Yeah, it'll be amazing. It'll be fucking great. It's Pacino and De Niro. You know, it's like, yeah. But anyway, fuck. I know they'll be watching this. And I know they'll be, I don't know, they're both huge fans of mine. So if...
Take a tips.
I just want both of you to... Alphonse?
Alistair.
I'm sorry. Yeah. So there you go. I'm sorry. You can't do that. No, I'm not doing that. That's an affectation. I was just talking about affectations. Don't do that. It's also fucking, what is it? It's appropriation or something, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. Anyway.
Rewind a little bit. Did you reckon your teachers ever had any faith in you?
No.
No? Have you seen any new teachers since?
Yeah.
What do they think now?
They're surprised. Nah, there's a couple. There's a couple I got along pretty well with. But fucking, one of them was my, I'm not going to say his name, but he was my drama teacher. He ended up going to jail. He was a really inspirational teacher as a drama teacher. Just like he was the one teacher who went, keep going, saw something or whatever. But yeah, he ended up going to jail. He went to some other school and fucking videoed some girls in some fake audition or something.
Yeah, wow.
Taped a camera and got real creepy or something, apparently. Went to jail. But yeah, that's one of those little peeking behind the curtain moments of the wizard, you know? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This guy go, he was still pretty inspirational to me. Do you know what I mean? It's like, what, was I not good enough? Good looking enough? Sorry. That's too soon. It was 20 years ago that when he did that. It was 30.
Is he out yet?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, it was 30. I finished year school 30 years ago. Yeah, that would have been 20. Oh, maybe even more. Might have been 25 years ago. You know? Yeah, but no, it's... Yeah, but nah. Great. No, a few teachers were... More of the teachers in the creative fields, my music teacher, my media teacher, drama teacher, were sort of mildly amused.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of them just thought I was a smart-ass little shithead, which I was. Imagine being a teacher. It's pretty amazing that, what a job. What a job to be a teacher. A vocational job to be a teacher. Went through lockdown with teaching our own kids and we almost went spare because we had to teach them 2 hours in a day. And these people teach 40 of someone else's kids all day, every day.
Yeah.
And they just give them all that shit. School for me and my mates was just like a place to get a laugh, you know? Like that's all. We literally treated it like that. I would have hated to teach, mate. Hated it. You know? I thought I was hilarious. But just like, shut up. Like you'd want to just... And I was just off the cusp of being able to get the strap. My brother got the strap. They outlawed it 2 years before I got to
got
to secondary school. Yeah. So I didn't get it. I would have been
a welting
candidate. It would have been a welting machine. Like a I would have been a whipping boy. That's what I would have been, a whipping boy.
Have a 1,000 meter line.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I would have been a whipping boy. And if I was one of them, I would have gone hard. Cuts. Six of the best for you, my boy. While we're here, let's make it 12. Please, sir, may I have another? Was probably what I would say, too.
And another.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know. Yeah.
There is.
No, I wouldn't. I'd be crying and yeah, I'd be a blubbering mess. Yeah. Yeah. But when they were about to dole it out, I'd be still being a smart ass. I'd say, make it 25, sir. Two baker's dozens, please, sir. 26. So, oh, you haven't met my baker. Actually, he's very generous. Round her up to 30. And then you do that thing where you, remember you got good with your parents? Where you,
you go with it. Yeah, you make sure you wear jeans as well.
Reduce it. Yeah, 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 yeah.
And all with it.
Yeah, yeah, reduce the feel of it. Kids today, far out. Hit kids today, whew, go to jail.
You can't even yell at soldiers in the army.
They know their rights. Everyone's read the Constitution, even four-year-olds.
I knew my rights, you knew your rights, but then...
Yeah, my right was if I slipped up at home, I got the wooden spoon. That's your rights. And then your rights are go to bed. You don't get to watch the Knight Rider.
MacGyver.
Yeah, or MASH. No goodies for you.
Columbo.
Columbo. Columbo. Yeah, yeah, he, yeah.
Kojak.
Kojak. Peter Russell Clark. See you later. Oh, Peter Russell Clark. You ever seen any outtakes of Peter Russell Clark?
No,
I haven't. Oh, potty mouth. Oh, is it?
Yeah.
How old are you?
39.
Oh, 39. Okay. Well, I'm only 47, but that's, I guess that's an 8-year buffer. Mm. Yeah.
Alright.
Alright. Good. Well, what time is it?
Just after 4. Thank you.
No worries, brother.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, man. Cheers. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for doing it. That was good.